Across the country, Republicans and their allies are filing lawsuits targeting state voter rolls. They claim they just want to ensure records are accurate, but their real motivation is much more sinister. This is Defending Democracy. We're your hosts. I'm Mark Elias.
And I'm Paige Moskowitz. Let's get started. Mark, we've seen a wave of new lawsuits from Republicans and conservative groups trying to gain access to states' voter rolls and purge voters. Why exactly are they doing this, and what is their main goal?
Well, so let's be clear. They're doing this because Republicans want to make it harder to vote and easier to cheat. And this is one of the tactics that they're using. Specifically, what they are trying to do is to facilitate what I have been calling election vigilantism. That is empowering small groups of conservative activists, Republicans at the local level, to intimidate voters, harass voters, submit challenges to try to prevent voters from being able to vote. And in some instances, they can do this by getting access to the voter rolls, which create an environment that both intimidate voters and also allows them to push for voter purges and submit these very, very bad and growing problem of privately sponsored election vigilante executed voter challenges.
Mark, we'll get more into the details of these lawsuits and what they're trying to do. But first, who is filing these lawsuits? Who's behind it?
Oh, my God, Paige, this is like a who's who, right? We start with the Republican National Committee. They are under new management, but their basic philosophy of suppressing voting rights, opposing voting rights, you know, it's a Trump down strategy. If Donald Trump doesn't want people to be able to vote, then the RNC is going to oppose it in every way that they can, regardless of who the chair is. Then you have the vast coalition or constellation of right-wing organizations. One of them, probably the most active in this particular space, is something called the Public Interest Legal Foundation, or PILF. It is chaired by, Paige, your and my good friend, Cleta Mitchell. I'm sure we'll get back to Cleta in a second. But you also have, you know, Judicial Watch, which for those of you who are on the older side, Paige, you may not know this, but Judicial Watch, you know, is like a throwback to the 90s. You know, it's like, I don't know what the fashion trends in the 90s were, but that's what Judicial Watch is. It came into prominence as an organization that went after Bill Clinton during his presidency. Well, they're still active, and they are still big in the election denying space. Their president now is Tom Fenton. They are one of the sources that Donald Trump oftentimes relies on to make his bogus voter fraud claims. An organization that we've talked a fair amount about and on Democracy Docket, there has been a fair amount written about, but is not quite the household name as the others, is something called the Voter Reference Foundation. Now, it is chaired by Gina Swoboda, former Trump campaign official and chair of the Arizona Republican Party. It is doing this project. It seems pretty well funded. It is doing this project of compiling state by state these voter rolls so that it can create a public database for these other conservative groups to access.
To get into the logistics of these lawsuits, there's kind of two different buckets that these cases fall into with slightly different goals. Can you tell us the difference between what these lawsuits are trying to do, and then we'll get more into it?
Yeah, look, I think it's important to distinguish the two buckets, but to be clear, this is all part of a whole, as far as I'm concerned. I think that these are mutually reinforcing. You know, this is like an intricate dance routine where you have some dancers running in one direction, others running in another direction, but ultimately they complement each other in ways that the audience can see. I hope that analogy worked for you there, Paige, because it worked for me. The two types of lawsuits in particular that we've been focused on are voter purge lawsuits. These are lawsuits where conservative or Republican organizations are trying to get the states to remove people from the rolls, like literally purge, Take them off the rolls. The other kind of lawsuit is more akin to a open records or public access kind of lawsuit, which, you know, on its face, people might be, well, what's wrong with open record or public access? But what they are trying to do is gain access to information about individual voters that, frankly, I think a lot of voters would rather they not have, and which they might find a little creepy, but are in any event being compiled, I believe we are going to see, for purposes and used for purposes that are going to be really problematic for voting.
Mark, according to the democracy.gov case database, which, by the way, now has over 700 election and democracy related lawsuits.
Which is amazing if you think about it. I mean, democracy.gov only started in 2020, and already it has become the definitive source for all of the case information you need for news, opinion, and analysis to be an informed citizen and to understand that in 2024, the future of democracy is going to be on the docket in courtrooms around America. Go to democracydocket.com, click on subscribe, do it right now. The link is right above.
Mark, Democracy Docket is tracking 10 lawsuits that are targeting voter rolls. These are happening in 9 states plus DC. Some of these lawsuits are voter purges. Some want public access to the rolls. Some are a mixture of both. But let's start by talking about the voter purge lawsuits, because that's probably the easiest for people to understand. These are lawsuits that are just trying to kick people off of voter rolls.
Yeah, it's really that simple. You know, you'd like to think that the Republicans have some more complicated scheme, or maybe you don't want to think they have a more complicated scheme, but you might think they do. No, this is just literally kicking people off the rolls. That's all it is. It is what is colloquially been understood to be a voter purge. They are suing states to say, you have not kicked enough people off the rolls, and we want them removed. Now, look, there is no question that states need to do routine periodic list maintenance because, you know, people die, people move, and the states have an interest in getting those people off the rolls. Now, to be clear, and this is something, Paige, that I think too many people out there like get misled about. It is not because dead people will vote. Like, the fact is a dead person can be on the rolls, but they're not going to vote because they're dead, right? Mickey Mouse can be on the rolls, but it's okay because the guy, the ears, you know, the Disney characters, not going to actually show up to vote. But states want to keep their rolls clear. They want to make sure that dead people are off the rolls. They want to make sure that no one is pulling a prank and registering Mickey Mouse. They want to keep their files neat and orderly because it allows them to administer the elections more efficiently and more cost effectively. But, you know, Paige, one of the key tools to doing that, one of the ways in which states kept their rolls clean, one of the ways that they did this routine maintenance, was through an organization that we have talked about, that Democracy Docket has written extensively about, called ERIC, which was a intrastate compact of a whole bunch of states. It still exists. I shouldn't say past tense, but it has been a very low profile, very non-controversial agreement between red states, blue states, and purple states to share information with each other so that if you move from Texas to Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. tells Texas, hey, we now have someone named Paige Moskowitz in D.C. And Texas says, good news, we had that person. They're now there. We'll take them off our rolls. You add them to yours. So ERIC was a system that allowed for the maintenance of these voter rolls and to make sure that people who had died or had moved were taken off. And of course, what we saw was that Republicans last year started to vilify ERIC and started to force their states, the states they control, to pull out of ERIC. Now, it's curious, Paige, why would they simultaneously be pulling out of a compact that removes dead voters and ineligible voters off the rolls at the same time that now they're suing states saying you have bloated voter rolls? I'll tell you why. Because they want the excuse to be able to run these election vigilante efforts, right? I said this several podcasts ago, you know, when we were talking about ERIC, and we've written about this and we can put it in the show notes. You know, they want chaos. They don't want clean administered elections. They didn't like ERIC because it created cleaner voter rolls. They wanted a chaotic voter rolls, a voter rolls that had more people on it. Again, There's no fraud that takes place. But what it does, Paige, is it gives them the excuse. It allows them the predicate to say, okay, now we need to sue because these voter rolls are bloated. When they lose those purge lawsuits, and mark my words, they will lose those purge lawsuits. Then they're saying, okay, well, we have no choice but to have election vigilantes. We had no choice but to stake out drop boxes. We had no choice. You know, think about it. The staking out the drop boxes that we saw with the body armor was because of the false information in 2000 mules and other fake information like that. They're setting this up now with these purge lawsuits. They want to create a false narrative that unless they resort to extra legal measures, unless they start to target voters through these vigilante efforts, then bad things will happen. So Paige, that is, I believe, the overarching narrative of what they are planning.
Mark, are voter purge lawsuits new or do they happen every election cycle?
You know, voter purge lawsuits are kind of like, they come in and out of vogue. You know, it's kind of like a lot of other cultural phenomenon that come in and out of vogue. But there's a lot of purging of voters in the 80s and the 90s. It was actually a tactic that got the Republican Party in a lot of trouble. You may remember there was a consent decree that prevented the RNC from engaging in certain activities. Some of that activity involved these illegal purges that were targeted at minority voters. And then Congress over the years in the 90s and then again in the early 2000s passed laws to try to curb these illegal purges and try to sort of organize them. So they kind of went and became less common. There has always been some litigation over whether you can remove names, but it does seem like in the last few months they are coming back into favor.
Mark, we really are seeing an acceleration in the rate of these lawsuits. Just a few weeks ago, the RNC changed their leadership, and since Michael Whatley and Laura Trump have become co-chairs, the RNC has filed new voter purge lawsuits in Michigan and in Nevada. What exactly is the legal basis for these cases?
They're swing states. Okay, let's just before we get into the legal basis, the Republicans are suing in Nevada and Michigan because they're swing states. And because Donald Trump wanted a chair to bring more voter suppression litigation, whether correct or not. You know, Ronna McDaniel was a lot of things. A legal genius, she was not. A good judge of legal talent, definitely not on her resume. I wrote about this recently, that they brought in Michael Whatley to be the chair. He's a lawyer. He's from North Carolina. I've litigated against the Republicans in North Carolina. I know him well. They've hired some other lawyers from Washington, D.C. who are, you know, this is not the Jenna Ellis, you know, Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani crew. They are trying to professionalize this operation, but they have brought these lawsuits in these two states because they want to placate Donald Trump's desire to bring more litigation. Now, what's the legal basis? The legal basis is that they say that the states are not complying with the National Voter Registration Act, sometimes referred to as NAVRA, and have an obligation to keep their voter rolls clean. I give that short shrift, Paige, because people listening to this need to see the forest from the trees. There's no coincidence that you get a new chair and then immediately they start suing two swing states.
The other type of lawsuits we're seeing are these public access lawsuits where groups are, you know, just trying to get a hold of a state's voter rolls. Why do they want those voter rolls and what are they trying to do with them?
Yeah. So why does Google want to know where you visit on the internet? Right? Why does your car now want to know whether you speed or whether you hard brake? Why does anyone in modern day America, why does any company want to collect massive amounts of data on people? It's because they can use that data, whether as part of an analytics program or as part of an AI program. They want to use this data to be able to more effectively target voters who they don't want to participate. You know, if you want to suppress the vote, one of the things you need to know is who are the voters, right? So think about it this way, Paige. You know, in iteration one, it's, you know, we want to target black voters. So we go to majority black precincts and we engage in targeted voter suppression. Then iteration two is we say, well, you know, we should not just target any precincts with large propensity of Black voters, but let's target, you know, precincts near historically Black colleges and universities because they're young Black voters. And now we can have a twofer. We can both suppress young voters and college voters, right? So over time, the people involved in voter suppression have gotten more and more sophisticated. And if they can have information at the voter level, in other words, Paige, they can know you and your information as an individual, then they can be much more effective in targeting voters for harassment, intimidation, and disenfranchisement.
We've seen a lot of these groups that are suing to get access to voter rolls say that they want to publish these voter rolls. You know, they want to get voters' information, publish it on a website. Eventually, the goal of all this is to make mass voter challenges more feasible, right? So, Mark, to help people understand why getting a voter roll helps you get to a mass voter challenge, what kind of information can a right-wing group get if they get their hands on a voter roll?
Yeah, so, you know, every state has to maintain, with the exception of, I think, North Dakota, a trivia question for another day, has to maintain a statewide voter registration system. They have to have essentially a list of all of the registered voters in the state. And that means that I keep using the word individual record. They have a record of each person as an individual, and that will include their date of birth. That'll include their name, obviously. It'll include their address. In many states, but not all, it will include their race. In states with partisan registration, it'll include what party they have registered for. In almost every state, it will include which primaries they voted for. So even if you don't have partisan registration, you will know they voted in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary. It'll also have what's called vote history. You know, did they vote or didn't they not vote? You know, did they vote in only the presidential years, but not in the midterm elections? Did they vote in the federal elections, but not in the off-year state elections? So it's got a lot of information about the individual person, and is therefore a very powerful tool or data set to start with if you are trying to figure out who are voters that support your candidates of choice and who are voters who oppose your candidates of choice.
We talked in a prior podcast before about how groups like VoteRef and Eagle Eye get their hands on this information. They publish it, which then helps election vigilantes go and initiate mass voter challenges in states across the country. So, Mark, I don't want to spend too much time on that because we literally could spend hours talking about the dangers of mass voter challenges. But we'll link that old podcast episode in the show notes below if you want to go ahead and take a listen. But what we hear from right-wing groups is that this is all public information anyway. This voter rolls are public records. What exactly is the danger in taking that private voter information that is publicly accessible and blasting it on the internet? And do you have data privacy concerns?
Yeah, I have a lot of data privacy concerns. And I think a lot of people do when they find out that, you know, they may get a mailer in the mail that says, we see, you know, Paige Moskowitz, we see that last election you didn't vote, but your neighbor did. And you're like, whoa, how'd they know that? Right? There's been press stories about these kinds of mailers. And the fact is that is based on these voter file information. That's actually a pretty benign, freaks a lot of people out and people don't like it, but that's actually a relatively benign use of this technology. But, you know, there's a good reason why public records are public. And I'm, you know, I support open record laws and support the government being held accountable by having their records have to be accessible to the public. But it's one thing that people can go to their local county office and look up their name or their neighbor's name or someone else on a computer terminal. It is even one thing for the political parties to get full access to the voter rolls. I think everyone would agree that Democratic and Republican parties should have access to those voter rolls because we want them to be more effective in communicating their policy positions and their candidates to voters. It is another thing, however, though, to have this big data put on the internet for everyone. And I think this is honestly, Paige, mirroring a larger debate that we have in society right now, whether it's arrest records, which have been historically public. But it's one thing if, you know, you could find out whether your neighbor was arrested by going down to your local police station. It's another thing if their arrest record is now part of a national national database that you can access online. There's lots of this information that I think people are concerned is now made available to all in all sorts of ways that really intrudes on their privacy. In the case of voter data, what I really worry about is that, you know, the federal laws, whether it's the National Voter Registration Act or the Help America Vote Act, there are these federal laws that are aimed at protecting the use of this data by states to engage in nefarious activities. These laws were not set up at a time when they contemplated that this data would be made public, and certainly not at a time when people understood that there'd be AI and other sophisticated techniques that could be applied against it. And so there are just inadequate protections for voters being targeted in ways that I think are really harmful. And Paige, let me give you a really quick example. People may think I am the only Mark Elias. I'm not, right? There are other people named Mark Elias. There's a real estate agent in Ohio who seems to be quite successful in selling homes in the Columbus area. Seems like a nice guy. If you're looking for a house in Columbus, Ohio, I recommend you check out Mark Elias. But, you know, there are other Mark Eliases throughout the country. And if someone got access through VoteRef or one of these other things, and wanted to challenge my ability to vote, even though I live in Virginia and this other Mark Elias lives in Ohio, you could see how they could do that, right? They would say, okay, well, let's search for all the Democrats who live in Virginia, and Mark Elias in Virginia is one of them. So now they've done that. Let's find for voters who vote routinely in presidential elections. Okay, they sort it down. Now they've gotten me on that spreadsheet. Let's see if there's other information that we can confirm that he's likely to be a Biden supporter. So they cross-reference that file against, you know, Twitter and X and social media. And they're like, oh, we've got a really good one. This guy, Mark Elias in Virginia, he's almost certainly going to vote for Joe Biden. Now, how can we challenge his right to vote? Well, lo and behold, there's another Mark Elias in Ohio. Maybe what we'll do is submit a challenge saying, we think the Mark Elias on the voter rolls in Virginia actually has moved to Ohio. And that's now the basis of our challenge. Now imagine that not just about me, but on a mass scale involving tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of voters experiencing this. Now, a lot of those are going to fail. A lot of them are going to fail because I'll be like, wait a second, I don't live in Ohio. I never lived in Ohio. And maybe the county I live in would even catch that. But some number of people are going to get freaked out that they've been challenged. And they're going to be like, you know what? I don't want to do something wrong. Some people may just be spooked or intimidated that they're on the radar screen of a right-wing voter suppression organization. You know, if they start getting mail from them, questioning, or someone comes to their door, Paige, I think Democracy.org reported on people canvassing door to door in New York or elsewhere. You know, some number of people are just going to be like, you know what? I don't want to have trouble in my life. I don't need to vote if it's going to subject me to some form of harassment. So that's why I worry so much about these right-wing vigilantes, because the state of Virginia is not going to say, hey, do you live in Ohio? They know I don't. And certainly if they're part of ERIC, which the Republican governor of the state won't let them be, they would know. But, you know, for a lot of voters, it's in a lot of places in this country, it's going to be quite intimidating and it's going to disenfranchise voters.
Mark, I don't want to misrepresent some states and make it seem like every single state is just willingly giving up their voter rolls to these right-wing groups, because states are fighting back, right? But they're having various success in keeping voter records and voter information out of the hands of controversial groups like these.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting, Paige, because it's not actually a partisan split, or at least not now. You know, we have seen Democratic states like New Mexico and Maine have resisted, but we've also seen them sue a state like South Carolina recently. You know, a very conservative state. You know, I think for many of these states and their AGs, who tend to be extremely conservative and anti-voting, I think that they also understand the ick factor for their constituents. You know, conservatives and Republicans don't like big data either. They don't like being targeted. They don't want people knowing, you know, having access to a lot of personal information. So I'm cautiously hopeful that we continue to see sort of states on a bipartisan basis push back against this, or at least in many places push back against it, at least, you know, in the near term. But in the end, you know, Donald Trump has a way of warping the Republican Party and conservatives' sense of right and wrong on just about everything. So we'll wait and see.
A recent decision on the matter came from the First Circuit, which ruled that Maine couldn't stop PILF from accessing and sharing voter roll information. The First Circuit ruled that the NVRA preempts Maine's voter privacy laws. Mark, what's your take on that?
I just think the First Circuit got it wrong. I mean, First Circuit's a good circuit, actually a very progressive bench. And DOJ honestly weighed in kind of in the middle in this case. They were not entirely on the side that, frankly, I would have hoped that they'd be on. I think it's, you know, I think that that, again, this is a forest from the trees problem. You know, it is one thing to say that at an abstract level, we think that this data should be publicly available. It is quite another to say that Maine's legitimate interest in protecting its citizens from intrusive violations of their privacy should get thrown to the side in a circumstance like this. So in some ways, you know, I thought that if I was critical, which I was, of the Supreme Court's decision in the Trump ballot case out of Colorado, because I thought there the court sort of yielded the law to what it thought was the exigencies of practicality. Justice Coney Barrett said the court wanted to take the temperature down. Here, I think the court did kind of the opposite. I think the court, frankly, should have taken the practicalities more into effect and realized that that the practical effect of this ruling is going to be quite upsetting, I suspect, for a large number of citizens in Maine. And so I hope other courts take different paths.
Mark, speaking of upsetting people, I think we've scared people enough with this episode talking about voter rolls. So before we leave, let's go over a few things people can do to protect their voter registration and make sure that they aren't being disenfranchised.
Yeah. So look, the single most important thing everyone can do, and it's something I encourage every one of you listening to do right now, or maybe not right now, maybe you want to finish listening to the podcast, give us a favorable review. If you liked it, leave us a review. But in the meantime, there are some things that every one of us can do. You can go to your state or county website and check your voter registration. You know, go to the source. Like, you don't need an intermediary. There are lots of good organizations that you can go through as well. But you can, you know, go directly to your state or secretary of state or county or board of election and make sure your registration is up to date where it ought to be up to date. You can also volunteer to become a poll worker. You know, we need good people working at the polls. We need good people working in election offices. Even if you can't work election day as a poll worker, you know, contact your local county office and see if there's something you can do to help them maybe process voter registration forms or just man the phones. You know, is there some way you can help the machine of democracy at the very local level take place? If none of that, there may be on the ground organizations that are helping to register voters. You know, Paige, I'm always reminded of one of the most inspirational people, you know, I have met. I meet a lot of really incredible people in the work that I do, but maybe the most inspirational person I have spoken to, Paige, is someone you and I met. I've never met them in person, but we met them virtually for many, many months. On when we used to do Twitter spaces. And it was a woman who, as I recall, lived in Georgia, but who would every week travel to North Carolina because there was a lot of going on in North Carolina to volunteer her time, to register people to vote, to get people out to local boards, to have their voices heard on issues. She was kind of an inspiration and is an inspiration to me because it is that kind of civic engagement where you are willing to lend your time that frankly makes all the difference in the world. You know, you can have lawyers like me in court, and I think that that's impactful. You can have people like Paige and I talk to you and educate you. But at the end of the day, we run our elections at the local level. And the way in which we're going to beat back voter suppression, the way in which we're going to keep the vote suppressors from winning, prevent the vote challengers from disenfranchising people, and frankly, ensure that we have free and fair elections is going to be because thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of Americans vote. And they also make sure that their neighbors can vote. Whether their neighbor is going to vote for their candidate of choice or someone else, they make sure their neighbors can vote. And when they make sure their neighbors can vote, they together make sure their community can vote. And so I wanted to give a shout out, Paige, to Yvette, who was the woman who we used to talk to. I hope she's doing well. But if we all have a little piece of Yvette's spirit, I think we're all going to be okay in 2024. Thanks for listening to Defending Democracy. You can find all of the cases and articles we mentioned today linked in the description of the episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and find out more and stay up to date on the latest voting rights and election news by visiting democracydocket.com and clicking on subscribe. You'll get our daily and weekly newsletters. We'll see you next time. Today's episode was produced by Ali Rothenberg, Gabby Corporal, and Paige Moskowitz. It was edited by Gabby Corporal and Paige Moskowitz. Defending Democracy is a production of Democracy Docket, LLC.